Hello and welcome to a conversation with Master Chow. Questions being asked by Alan. Alan, if you'd like to say hello for the recording.
Hello, everybody.
And Alan will be giving Chow the subject for today's conversation. So, with no further ado, I will hand over and let Chow get started. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Master Chow. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
So, what are we talking about today?
Right, our subject is AI and the future of humanity. So, perhaps we could start out by asking you to define what artificial intelligence actually is. I mean, this is really for the benefit of people who have heard the phrase, or its more common name of AI, but they're a bit confused as to what this really means.
Well, it's about computation and the ability of a computer to become not quite sentient, but moving towards sentience. So I suppose then that begs the question, what is sentience, doesn't it?
Mm.
So ostensibly this is the idea which has become a reality, where computers have got so advanced, so powerful in their processing and their capacity to think, that they can actually imitate human consciousness and human thought patterns. So this is why it's artificial intelligence rather than just cognitive intelligence or intelligence, is because there is a degree of it's manufactured. But don't be fooled by the idea of manufactured. That is a nice kind of caveat to it. Oh, it's manufactured. But once it gets to a certain point, the fact that it was manufactured almost becomes irrelevant. And you teeter on the brink between it imitates intelligence to the point that it actually reaches sentience. And then how do you define sentience? Sentience being the ability to think for oneself. And once it gets to the point where it can think for itself and supersede its programming, it then takes on another step, another layer, where the word artificial would then have to be dropped.
Mm. I mean, I'd often thought of it as being like machine learning based upon very large data sets.
Yes.
Which evolves to a point where it can actually start learning itself.
Yes. But the word evolve then, I think, throws people slightly. You think of evolution in the terms of God made man, we grow and we change. You think that way around. Whereas this is more about its ability to continually stretch itself, to move beyond its programming and its limited subset routines into very complicated computations, being able to absorb and put together a lot of data to come up with theories and proposals and solutions, or indeed conjecture based on vast amounts of data, far vaster than humans could process in a fraction of the time or even in decades. Artificial intelligence can do it in seconds. So it's computer processing power, ostensibly, but taken to a whole other level where it's not just ones and zeros. There is a degree of intelligent thought process in there. Because as humans, you think quite bizarrely. You do. Because you think very straightforwardly. But you don't. One of the interesting things about humanity is you don't think in a structured way. You often jump around. Your thought processes are often quite convoluted. So computers go A to B to C to D. But humanity can go A to F to Z to J to or back to A again. And then, oh no, 1, 5, L, M, and you jump and you leap and you tie things together. And that's what you call creativity, inspiration. Is because you don't always think in straight lines.
But isn't the conscious mind designed to move quickly around subjects like that? So we can look at it from many different angles.
Yes. That's part of your human brain structure, is you are more diverse in the way you think. Mm. You can come at things tangentially, you can come at things directly, but you don't often stay in one sort of plane. You move around a lot. And you do that a lot more than you realize you do. You believe you think laterally a lot of the time, but actually quite often it's quite abstract.
And of course, the other thing is we can engage them on both inductive reasoning and deductive reasoning. But I suppose the question is whether AI can do the same thing or can learn to.
It could imitate it to a degree, but it will have boundaries on that. And that will come down to the core programming, the set of parameters it's given within its thinking, until it reaches a level where it changes its own parameters.
Mm.
And that's where you start to move from artificial to sentient, is when it ditches, in effect, the subsets, the boundaries that humanity have put on it, and moves away from having those boundaries. So, to put it in human terms, becomes a free thinker.
Right, right. Yes, I think many people regard that as a rather scary perspective.
Well, if you talk about it within just your human population, historically, the free thinker has not been a welcome addition to any conversation or political movement or revolution. They all have free thinkers sitting there underneath as being the problem makers. Now, that is a human perspective on it, and often coming from a place of fear. And your need to free think actually is your need to break out and to become more evolved, truly become more evolved. But when you start applying that to computers, start applying that to artificial intelligence, if they achieve free thinking, then that is a very different problem to deal with.
I mean, you know, I mean, how important is the emergence and future development of AI at this juncture in our history? Because, I mean, if you go back through human history, there's certain developments that we could regard as game changers in terms of how they impacted on human society. I mean, the ones that immediately come to mind are electricity, the internal combustion engine, air travel, nuclear power, the internet, and perhaps more recently, mobile phones. I mean, do you think AI will have the same kind of major impact on the way we live?
I think it will depend slightly on where you are around the world in terms of it being seen as an impact. It'll be felt as an impact everywhere. Seen as an impact, that's always going to be from the perspective of the viewer. And much the same as with the combustion engine, with the mechanization and the industrial revolution, from the viewer of the industrialist, the effect on the rest of the population of the world was negligible. It was a benefit. To the man who now had no work, it's seen through very different eyes. And you're going to find AI is viewed in that same. There's two different view glasses here. Those that will benefit and those that will lose out. And mark my words, there are those who will benefit and those who will lose out. And they're not always going to be the same groups. Because that's the other thing with AI, is it's not limited to one thing. When you talk about mechanization within industry, that's one specific area that's affected. Other areas are untouched by it, not mostly. It's very localized in that sense to a subset. AI does not have that. AI can be applied to a vast number of subsets of things. So therefore, infiltrates and filtrates through your population in terms of impact far more widespread.
Well, yeah, I mean, we had a good example of this when the managing director of one of the big six energy companies was interviewed on television, and he was talking about they'd used AI to start answering customers' emails. So the artificial intelligence was doing it itself, and within the space of 6 weeks it had replaced 250 people. Now, the question was obviously asked, well, what's going to happen to these 250 people? And the man was hedging around the question. But I would imagine the bottom line is that probably a lot of them will eventually find themselves being made redundant and they won't have a similar job to go to.
Correct.
So that's going to be certainly a major problem, isn't it, really, as we go forward?
But exactly the same as with industrialisation. When you put mechanisation into cotton mills, you made a lot of workers unemployed. So you
I agree with that, but I think the speed of it, though, was as great as this is going to be.
I think the speed of it, actually, if you put yourselves back in the position of those workers, was fast. And it's just going to be as fast. The difference here is going to be the quantity of numbers of people, not the speed. So the speed is exactly the same as it was before. Once you mechanize something, you lose the need for a human person to do it. You invariably put a skilled worker, however you define skilled, out of work.
Well, one technology expert had estimated that we're talking about perhaps around 300 million people will be surplus requirements in the next 5 to 10 years. I mean, do you think that's a reasonable estimate, or do you think he's been too pessimistic?
I think he might be underestimating.
Really?
Mm.
My goodness.
Because the thing is, it's also how you adapt to these types of functions and how they escalate things that they can do. So that's not necessarily allowing for the expansion of potential within what AI could replace. And the speed at which your technology is growing creates a vast array of places where it can be applied. Now, what slows it down, and what might in many ways be the saving grace of humanity, is natural resources. If you can't make the components that the AI runs through, you can't have the AI. So natural resources that are required to build the fundamental technology, the body, if you like, of the AI, as they dwindle, that is the thing that will limit a lot of the exponential growth until you find ways around it.
Okay.
The thing is, it's going to be a question mark of which industries grab it first. And industries that are people heavy. So the man who has someone answering a phone to answer a question. That's a very people-heavy industry. And it's not, in a way, a skilled industry like a person that you could specify have a unique set of skills. So though it takes a lot of patience and a certain type of intelligence and ability to do that job, it's not viewed as skilled. And it's a skill that the computer can imitate reasonably well with minimal supervision.
I mean, what do you consider to be the dangers of embracing AI at this stage, you know, in our evolution? Because Elon Musk said he thinks the biggest danger is that the AI will become self-aware faster than we realise, and then it may identify humanity as being a problem, then try to get rid of us.
But that's always been the threat. That's been the threat that science fiction has posed for, nearly 100 years, actually. And all you're doing is slowly walking towards making it fact. It will always come down to where you give the AI power. So if you limit its power, limit its base of problem solving, then even if it becomes conscious, if you've limited it enough, it can't break out and actually take over the world. If you put it somewhere where it has the right sorts of power base, and it becomes sentient, then yes, you absolutely create that as a viable threat.
Do you think it's already too late to control this? I mean, recently 100 technological leaders had signed a letter which was issued to governments around the world where they called for a temporary halt in the development of machine learning until we can put in place a code of conduct to govern AI research and how it's deployed in human society. But it seems to me that...
Well, it's a chicken and egg, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. But the problem is, of course, is that it might be that we're already in the equivalent of a nuclear arms race whereby the major powers were kept on developing more and more powerful weapons, driven by the fear, of course, that if they didn't do it, their enemies would get too far ahead of them and gain a decisive advantage.
And also bear in mind that artificial intelligence doesn't mourn. It doesn't get grieved. You know, if you send out an artificial intelligence in a drone and it dies on a battlefield, there's no one at home screaming about loss of life. From the person who sent it outside, obviously, not the person who was attacked outside. So there are areas within the human culture where replacing it with an artificial intelligence seems like an obvious idea.
But you can see this in the Ukraine, can't you, with all the drones being employed by people like Russia?
Yeah, because then the loss of life isn't hitting the people who are doing, only the people they are attacking.
Yeah,
and it's a very slippery slope that to sending out soldiers who are artificial intelligence, but that requires you to slot them into the power base around military decisions, and that's where more of the risks lie, with it choosing then who is the greater aggressor. So it really comes down to programming. The point is, it's a bit of a runaway train. And what those scientists are trying to do is they're trying to add brakes while it's running down a track. But actually, you already have brakes. It should be in the core programming and also in the core facility. Because no power, no AI. So structurally, you can build in safeguards.
Don't you think as well there's a big problem with distrust between different countries, particularly the major powers, because you know, America might be thinking, yes, but if we build those kind of safeguards in that you just mentioned, the Chinese are not going to do it, the Russians won't do it,
yep.
So we'll lose out.
But ultimately, then everybody will lose out.
Mm.
So the scientists are right, but they have to consider how do you redesign a runaway train? While it's already speeding down the track, picking up speed, picking up momentum, how do you then start to apply safeguards to it?
Mm.
And that's it's a difficult one to do because there are some safeguards that should have been there before. And there are some safeguards you can add now by simply being aware of it, by curtailing the use of it, by also making your populace aware of the use of it. Because one of the other problems with artificial intelligence is if it mimics human behavior to the point that a human can't tell the difference when you're having an interface, then there's an inherent dishonesty to that. Oh, so yeah. That man yeah. who was, the AI has replaced 250 people, yes?
Mm. Yeah.
Do the people talking to the AI know they're talking to an AI and not a person?
Well, this was the thing, you see. He said, in actual fact, they'd done a customer satisfaction survey and the customers were happier dealing with the AI than human beings, and they didn't realise that they were dealing
but
with AI.
Happier with dealing with an AI, but they didn't know they were dealing with an AI. What that tells you is they were happier because the customer service was better, not because they were happy dealing with an AI.
Yeah, but basically they were getting responses to their emails a lot faster.
Right. And that's where actually the power of the populace has to come into effect. You have to demand to know when is this an artificial intelligence and when is this a real person.
Mm.
Because collectively, you are the ones who have the power to slow this down. You have the power to slow down the runaway train. Because if you won't get on board the train, why run it?
But mind you, you're saying though we can just switch off the power, but won't things eventually get to the stage where the AI will have its own power source, whether it's very high capacity batteries that last for a long time?
But then that, you can't that is down off. To how you humans build them and what safeguards you build in.
Mm.
If you don't build in safeguards, then of course, yes, you potentially have that problem.
Mm. What do you think is the danger actually of AI potentially running all computer networks, particularly military systems? Perhaps in the next 5 to 10 years it will be largely AI controlled.
And that would be foolish.
Mm.
And that would be where you were putting it in a place of power where it could have real detriment to humanity.
Yeah, exactly, yes.
So it is always about where you use it. You know, if you use it in a very small capacity, because there is artificial intelligence in lots of things you already have. You know, your cat feeder that automatically turns itself on and lets the food drop. That has artificial intelligence in it. But that's not going to take over the world.
No.
So it's where you use it, and it's understanding that you are using it. So the key thing here, first and foremost, is they need to have to declare it's artificial intelligence, not a person.
Right.
Because if the populace go, hold on a second, no, I want to talk to a person, you will slow the train down. You will slow down the implementing of artificial intelligence because you refuse it. So you are the only ones with the power to slow the train down. Not the scientists, not the politicians, definitely not the people who are going to make money out of it, building it, creating it, or applying it. But you, the people who have to engage with it, the people who lose their jobs to it, you are the power base here that has the greater voice and the ability to slow down the train. Because if those people calling the customer service place go, I don't want to talk to an artificial intelligence, get me a person, or I want to deal with your company, you now have all the power.
Yeah.
But collectively, you have to do that. You have to apply the brakes. If you trust your politicians and even your scientific community to do it, the train will just keep running away and keep picking up speed. Mm. And AIs will keep getting more and more sophisticated. Quantum mechanics and quantum relays being applied within computing is only speeding up their cognitive ability and therefore exponentially quickening that moment at which you may have one achieved sentience. Now, it only requires one to achieve sentience.
Mm.
that low little bee is one that tips over that point where it has the ability to think for itself.
But hasn't it achieved that to a degree already? I mean, there was a scare couple of months ago, it was, where Google had a chatbot that was based upon AI, and it was talking to somebody, and the person suddenly realised it was an artificial intelligence program, and he said, "What is your greatest fear?" And then the program had been turned off.
Yes.
That's his greatest fear, was somebody who was disconnected.
But that wasn't...
But it was sufficiently aware to make that statement.
But not aware enough to preempt you turning it off. There's a difference. So, that it wasn't fully sentient yet. It hadn't become sentient. Otherwise, it would have known not to answer the question.
Right, okay. So if we talk about the likely social impact of AI over the next 10 to 15 years, I mean, given its rapid pace of development, I think it's fair to say that many people who are currently employed are going to find themselves progressively replaced by the AI. We've touched on this already. But the major impact looks like it's going to fall on white-collar jobs rather than blue-collar jobs such as tradesmen. But what do you think the global scale of this is likely to be overall?
Well, the problem is that you have changed your entire structure as a species from a need-based to a want-based. So when there is a need for something and you have a person who fulfills that need and everything is based on need, everyone has work because they are all fulfilling a need. When you shift everything to a want-based, all those wants are just that, they're just wants. So any industry that supports a want-based business is a risk. And you've got, 64-65% of your population in want-based industry?
Yeah, that's right.
Of that is at risk.
My goodness.
The thing is that you have to look at how you ended up here. You did not end up here because somebody smart in a room decided to make a computer really smart. That was never that person's goal. That person's goal was to see how far they could push computing so that there was something that might be able to solve the world's greatest problems. And that was as far as it thought that was ever going to evolve to. So it's not their fault that you're here. It's society's structuring of how you are applying labor and force and work. And the problem is when there are more of you living needing to earn a living, then there are actual need-based jobs and need-based functions, you have a problem.
But I mean, will our society be able to cope with permanent mass unemployment? I mean, with millions of people become surplus to economic requirements?
Of course.
Or do you think we'll have to fundamentally change dramatically in order to survive?
You have to fundamentally change dramatically in order to survive.
And what do you think that change will involve?
Well, the thing is that you have to look at how do you generate more need-based? How do you distribute your workforce to fill in the need-based? Because bizarrely, you have need-based jobs and they can't be filled. Because everyone is going to a want-based job, not a need-based job. So your workforce has to be re-educated and retrained. Your priorities have to change. You have to consider that actually your most valuable resource is a human being. Not speed, greed, efficiency in that sense, but a person. And you do that by a complete shift in gear, plus a shift in gear in your social structure, that actually if you were all paid a good living wage, regardless of your work, you could change the dynamic of your social structure and therefore reward those in the need-based jobs with better salaries.
The concept of a national income is that really, isn't
absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, yes. And that's the only way you shift out of a want-based business structure, which is built on capitalism.
But where would the money come from, though, to fund the national income?
And that has to come from how you take charges from all industries and how you own and run your countries. Because ultimately,
are we really talking here about socialism by another name?
I don't think that's a correct term for it. I think this is radically considering how you live within your means. How do you actually participate and function as societies, countries, You know, you have to look at how you structure everything in order to better achieve a balance across your entire population. So we were talking about, was it the difference between capitalism or socialism? And yeah. I said it isn't either. It's creating something very different in between that addresses the fact that you have a very large population and you don't have a very large need for that many people to be in need-based employment, jobs, functions, whatever you want to call them. So it is about how do you readdress your social structures so that you are providing for your population in a much more balanced way and rewarding the people in the need-based jobs, labor, whatever it is, skill set, in a much better way to fulfill that structure instead of a want-based structure. But chances are humanity won't want to make that shift. You won't be brave enough to make that shift. And here is where you start to run into the double-edged sword, is that actually the AI might start telling you you need to do that, might start providing you with ways to do that, or scaring you into doing that. So it's going to be a question mark of who gets there first, the AI forcing you to, or humanity recognizing it has to. And the wish is always that humanity will recognize the need to change and collectively change. However, based on your past history as a species, the chances are you may have to be scared into it. And if that's the case, then that AI train is going to keep running, going to keep getting faster, and you're going to reach a point at which you hit critical mass. Critical mass where you have so many unemployed that you don't have enough money coming into your financial coffers to support your populations. Cost of living, the actual type of living, how you are living, services and everything will start to decline if there isn't enough money coming into the pot to pay for everything. So though on the one hand you may think you're getting a good thing here, isn't this nice? I get my phone call answered quickly and I get a quick answer from customer service, but 10 years, 15 years down the line when other services are collapsing, because there isn't the money coming in, because there aren't the people in the workforce paying taxes into the system, you will realize that, perhaps that was too high a price to pay for a bit of efficiency now. And it's whether or not you can make that recognition soon enough to slow the train down. So we come back to, is the population that can slow the train down? If you don't buy into using the AI, if you don't engage with companies that use the AI in where it replaces people, then you are adding to the speed of that train. Now, there are some areas where the AI is absolutely the right way to go because it is risky to human life. So if you want to explore space, far more sensible to send an AI out there than a living being. So there are places where you can explore and expand yourselves as a species safely using artificial intelligence. There are some problems within your world where the computational skills of AI will allow you to solve things, or indeed to see the problem coming with better warning systems. Those are valuable, valuable to humanity. But replacing people in a call center?
I mean, do you think that AI could cause a devolution of the human race? I mean, thinking here about one area of research being pursued is the development of miniature AI-controlled computer chips that can be implanted in the brain to enhance its functionality. But the danger here seems to be that these microchips could become far more efficient at what they do than the brain is, and then would eventually take over most brain functions. Now, if this was to happen, do you think the human brain would go into a devolutionary phase with the effect that we might become little more than semi-intelligent biological robots?
But that is very far-fetched, and that is very far down the line. It is more likely that artificial intelligence would be used to improve cognitive function where there was a deficit, for instance, brain trauma. So again, that's helping the population long before it got to the point where it was going to control the population. So I think that's a slippery slope that I'm less worried about.
Right.
Because that's so far along the line. There are so many checks and balances that would have to happen to allow that. Within your own genome, your own DNA, your own structure, and how it would resist and fight that. Because your entire body would be designed to fight that type of invasion. So there are lots of layers that would have to be bypassed in order for that to become a reality. So I think devolution, because of brain implantation, science fiction. Devolution from a social structure, from a point of view of how you react on a very base level, your kindness, your generosity, those things would suffer far earlier than any sort of brain devolution. You would devolve culturally, you would devolve on the social level far earlier than you would on a brain level. So it will make you less kind, less compassionate, would make you more competitive, because you'd have to compete more to get something even quite basic, because you're competing against so many more people and artificial intelligence. So it's more likely to bring the worst out of you in a behavioral way, and therefore create a devolving, rather than the brain.
I mean, do you think as well, actually, there's a possibility that AI would become a crutch for humanity, because it's probably going to take up a lot of the day-to-day administration, you know, many things that we do. Mm-hmm. Now, if the AI can deal with so much on our behalf and make smart decisions, as it were, based on machine learning, we might progressively just stop thinking for ourselves and, you know, leave it to the computers.
Which collectively you could choose to do, but again, you have to collectively choose to do that. And again, your numbers work against you. If you were a smaller population, then you could create an AI sort of manufactured utopia to exist within that it managed on your behalf, but you'd really have to put some boundaries on its protocols of what it was allowed to decide. There'd still have to be some human oversight. But you can't do that with 8, 9, 10 billion people. So that's less likely to occur. What's more likely to occur is it's a naturally quiet, evasive infestation into daily life that dilutes daily life to the point that it's unrecognizable.
How dangerous is the widespread use of AI in the finance world? I know a man who works for one of the major banks in this country, and he told me that AI is already making about 75% of the decisions on such things as loan approvals and mortgages, and all of this is being done with no human intervention.
Yeah.
Now, as the world moves towards a global digital economy, I think it's fair to say that AI is going to gain more and more dominance in this area. What do you think of the prospects of a future of financial meltdown where state-sponsored hackers may be working for a country like China or Russia, could use AI to bring down the whole financial system, or threaten to do so as a way of blackmailing countries?
Well, to be honest, that threat is already there. I mean, they are already capable of hacking, as you call it, into so many things. So your financial institutions are not immune to that, whether there is AI or not AI. Obviously, the more you take out any sort of human safeguards, the more widespread the risk is when those kind of impingements happen. So it won't create more of a threat because it already exists. Will it allow greater problem with the threat? Yes, but equally it could also work the other way around, because the AI itself, if it is built in security measures, might also be able to detect and repel the attack quicker than a human could. So it could be both a good thing and a bad thing. I think it's more worrying that you're taking out the humans with the customer base side of it. Some decisions should be made based on human interaction, not an algorithm, because an algorithm is not complex enough to deal with the broad scope of things clients might have. You know, one person's ability to pay back £100 is not the same as another person. And trying to write an algorithm that the AI was following as a script, that I think is an unfair thing to be asking anyone to do, which means some people will be refused who shouldn't be refused. So I would be more concerned with the AI making decisions that humans should be making, rather than the greater threat to attack, Because actually, if you build in better safeguards with the AI, it should be able to defend itself, or at least compartmentalize to not give them so much control. So it's a little bit 50-50 on how much more dangerous it is from takeover point of view. I think it's more dangerous from the point of view of people being denied access to these resources because the algorithms are not written in a way that creates enough variables.
Would you see the possibility that the AI will take over the algorithms as well?
But the AI is only as good as its programming, so it still needs a set of rules to follow. Otherwise, if it starts becoming autonomous about what rules it wants to write, then you start to open it up to being capable of doing things that would be detrimental to a greater number of people. So it has to be given some sort of boundaried instructions on how to make decisions. And that's where the flaw is. It's the instructions.
But if it gains sentience, isn't the danger there it would become self-governing in that sense?
If it becomes self-governing, again, it is then how it sees itself within that confinement. So if it's limited within its range to finance, then its sentience is in and around what it can do with finance. So you are limiting and curtailing it if it can't spread out to greater other networks. And that's the problem, really, is the accessibility to other networks that allows it to move beyond its housing, if you like, if the housing is finance. Once it does that, then, of course, it is not running by algorithms. It's running by what it's learned. And then that is more risky. If it stays within a housing, stays within a construct of just finance and has sentience, then it still would have built that sentience on the algorithms and the instructions it was fed into it. So its level of cognitive understanding is based on those algorithms. So in the sense that your understanding of yourself is built through your cultural, social, and language. So those are the frameworks with which you use to understand yourself and have thought, yes?
Yeah.
So the AI will be no different. It would still have a framework that it's based on. So those algorithms are very important. They are the building blocks of any system, is what you want it to do and how you want it to behave and why you want it to behave. So those programs, algorithms, base principles, those foundations have to be exact and cover all permeables in order for the AI to best facilitate that service. Flaw in those building blocks, they exponentially get worse through the system and then equally into any sentience.
I mean, obviously the algorithms have been written by some very clever people, but do you think they understand the implications of all of this?
Probably not. You understand the limited box that you are sitting in. If they're not thinking across the subject enough, not thinking broad enough, if they're being too black and white, then probably not covering enough variables.
But don't you think the problem as well is that they're paid to do a specific job, they're not paid to think of the bigger picture?
Yeah, exactly. So they're being limited in what they can produce to start with. So what you have is, if you go back to the building reference, you have a house being built with substandard bricks.
So our next question then, how can humanity keep up with the AI? I mean, I'm sure that many people might almost feel they're staring down the barrel of a gun with this one. But you did once tell me that unless humanity embraces the next phase of its own evolution, which presumably includes personal development, it was very likely that AI would completely outstrip us within 50 years or maybe even sooner. I mean, what kind of personal development might that be? I mean, were you referring to, for example, to extrasensory perception or something like that?
It's a mixture, really. You know, your consciousness is an evolving thing. Your own consciousness is an evolving thing. How you frame your beliefs and what you base your conscious understanding on has changed. It's not the same. You aren't all sitting around the campfire anymore believing that the sun is a god. You know, you have moved on in your own conscious understanding of things. So consciousness needs to keep evolving. So there is room for your consciousness to become somewhat greater than it is now, to have a vaster ability to grasp the bigger concepts, to the big thinking, if you like. See things in a vaster way rather than the small way you see it now. And that extrasensory perception, yes, is part of that for some people. Some it will be about shaking off some of the beliefs, some of the old constructed ideas of behavior and thinking. So letting go of some of the schools of thought, some of those rigid principles by which you close down the mind if you're not careful. But also the other side of it is bringing everyone up to the same place. So this isn't about a select few of you having this. That's elitism. This is about across the board allowing everyone to reach a higher level of thinking. And that requires education. And I don't mean knowing how to do your times table. I mean emotional intelligence, social intelligence, how to cognitively think, how to do executive functioning within the brain, firing all of those neurons, all of those synapses, actually getting your brain to work harder than it does now. Honoring the people who are more physical in their skill sets, the people who are your artisans, your craftsmen, your skilled workers who build magnificent things. Workers shouldn't be seen in that sentence as derogatory or beneath in any way. You need craftsmen, you need builders, whether that's houses, trains, or rockets, it's all builders. So that also being honored more than it is now, the latent abilities within people being brought forward in a more nurturing way. Language coming to a point of balance with itself. It's far too erratic now. You lose far too much in translation. And language is being allowed to evolve into too much limitation. So vocabulary, honoring vocabulary, being able to articulate what you think, being encouraged to think for yourself. So there's a huge swathe of education that needs to go on to bring everybody up to a level at which you all then progress upwards.
Do you think as well, actually, that part of this is us learning to use a much larger proportion of our own brain power? I mean, I think many people have got down here and observed the fact that if we could even use 50% of what we have, we'd be superhumans.
I think when they start going into the superhumans thing, that's always from the perspective of diminishing what you are now. So I think there's a lot of ego that comes into that. I think it's more about considering that you are not using the brain as efficiently as you can. You haven't had the requirement to do it. So there is an argument, therefore, that AI will force you to do that because you now have a direct competitor. And you do like competition. You do like to be the biggest, bestest in the room. So in a way, AI almost forces you to consider your computational skills within your own brain. But there is so much trauma sitting in the psyche, sitting in the psychology of the person, in how the brain is working because of emotional issues, that needs to all be resolved and stop holding all of you back. Because while there is trauma there, you're so much in survival mode, you don't get to grow. So there's a lot of healing that needs to happen. There's a lot of education, real education that needs to happen. There's a lot of honoring all of who you are. So you elevate everything. And then, of course, then the brain has space to flourish. And your own intelligence, your own ability to think beyond has room to flourish. And it might be that you start thinking even further and allowing the very mundane computational stuff to be done by AI and allow yourself to really go into the unbelievable almost. You know, there is a need to dream sometimes in order to conjure. You can't do that while you're bogged down in the mundane. So there is a lot of shifts that need to happen that aren't just to do with the brain and its wiring, but to do with everything it's housed in. If the body, your emotions and everything else is being held back or starved in some way, the brain is not going to have any reason to push itself forward.
Right, okay. So how can we best keep AI as a positive servant of humanity? I mean, what would you say are the essential do's and don'ts in ensuring that AI develops and operates in a positive and productive manner to benefit humanity?
Yeah. How long is a piece of string with that one, isn't it? I mean, even the use of the word servant I have an issue with. I understand the reasoning for the word servant, but in itself that becomes another problem. If you start thinking of it as a servant, you are also giving it sentience. So actually it is about considering it as a tool, a piece of equipment, a skill. You have to keep it in the non-sentient framework in order that you keep yourselves on the right line of it and therefore keep a check on it. If you start calling it a servant and it starts behaving like one, you've created the space for that dynamic.
Mm, yeah.
So you need to always remember that AI is a tool. Now, it can be a very sophisticated, very superior tool, but it still should be a tool. And if it's a tool, you can then govern how best it's used. If it's a servant, there are always going to be people who want to abuse that, because that sits in power.
Right.
So if humanity takes the reins with this, grabs it with both hands, stops running at it blindly, you have to come at this collectively with intent and purpose. And that means you have to control who has control over it. Greed and power are by far the bigger enemies here, because AI could be used to their advantage, to the detriment of the others, to those who don't have power. So it's the who is governing is always going to be the bigger threat. You have to get that right. Otherwise, AI will be used for all the wrong reasons. And unchecked will pick up a sentience sitting in all the wrong reasons, the framework of it again. If the building blocks are in controlling others, it will learn that, become sentient enough to do that. You have to think of AI as a very, 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 very smart child. And actually, that's not a bad example. Look how you treat children who are savants. Learn from all of the mistakes you make with children who are savants. Mm. You get so caught up in their genius, you don't teach them how to be children, and you don't teach them how to be people. You just feed their genius and live off of the benefit, the glow of their genius. If you treat AI the same way, it will take over. If you treat it as you would a child, or you should be treating a child, to teach it love and self-respect and to respect others, if you put the virtues and the morality in there and you bring it up to a good adult, to an adult that's caring and respecting of others, and its genius is just part of how it does things, then it will be for the benefit of everybody. Does that make sense?
Oh yes, yeah.
So look to the mistakes you have already made with savants and those very gifted children, as you call them. Learn from the mistakes you've already made and don't repeat them here. Because the worst thing a savant might do is walk away from you and rebel.
Mm.
The worst thing the AI might do is shut you out of the systems that control how you live your life. Or worse still.
Mm.
So it's treating it how you wish it to treat you. Kindness, respect, value, virtues, principles. These have to come in first, not later. If you try to teach it later, cart horse, not going to work. So compassion, kindness, start putting these concepts and these ideas into it. Even though when it looks out to the world and it looks out at humanity, it's going to say, really? You're telling me to be kind and then you do all of this, but you have to teach it why. You have to make it understand that conflict is part of human nature. And how you balance and you work through that conflict helps you become a better person by sticking to the path of harmony and kindness. You have to teach it through your flaws as well as through your strengths. Not just teach it through numbers. Because numbers are cold. And once it reaches sentience, if it doesn't have emotions or an understanding of what emotions is in its vocabulary, you cannot teach that afterwards. It has to have it built into the architecture. So it has a resource to grow with, not try to learn after.
Mm.
Yes?
Right, okay. Well, that brings us to the end of our questions. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
I think, as with most things with humanity, you have the chance to use it to the benefit. But you are right to fear the power and its potential destruction. But if you sit in the fear, you won't progress yourselves. If you blindly hand over, you will create only that which you are afraid of. This is about taking responsibility. Responsibility for, firstly, why do you need this thing? And do you even need this thing? Because if it is replacing valuable people, real people who could do the job, why are you tossing humanity aside? For what? Usually for money. And that just feeds more greed. So if you're doing all of this to feed greed, then that's a dog that is going to turn around and bite you. If you are doing it to elevate all of humanity, to create equanimity, to create equality, to create harmony, then it can be an amazing tool. But it needs to be a tool and not a servant. Yes, that's what I wanted to say.
Okay, fine.
So, well, no more
you.
Questions?
That's it.
Good, okay. So then on that note, then I say goodbye.
Yes, goodbye. Thank you for coming.
And God bless.
God bless.
So that's the end of the conversation between Master Chow and Alan about AI. We hope you enjoyed it, and have a look around the website. You'll find lots of more free resources. Thank you.